gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, super friends, welcome back to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue number 47 for New Comic Book Day, March the 15th, 2017. I'm your host, Ken, and sitting here along with me in the basement of the Hall of Justice is my good buddy, Vern.
Hello, everybody.
So, Vern, how you doing, man?
Pretty good, pretty good. We had a nice week of comic books, and we missed one TV show that they didn't put out, but we got the other stuff. And yeah. We got so much news to cover.
Oh, yeah. As I'm typing, but for some reason there was no Arrow this week. Well, last week we missed out on Legends of Tomorrow. Lose out on Arrow. I wonder what's going on.
And didn't we lose Flash like 2 weeks ago, before the whole Gorilla Grodd
takeover? I think it was this. No, wait, that's when we missed out on Super Friends. Legends of Tomorrow and Flash both took a hiatus the same week for some reason.
Okay. Hey, they need a break, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. But we do have, we did see Supergirl, Flash, and Legends. Last week, for some reason, Powerless took a week off. But we do have some Powerless news for this week.
Ooh.
So, you saw that on the rundown, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I'm also looking at Kevin Smith's Instagram page, and he was talking about since he directed 2 episodes of Flash and 2 episodes of Supergirl, he now has the honor of this 4-way Playfest panel. At the CW Arrow and Supergirl Legend of Tomorrow panel at the Paley Center of Media. So
yeah, the Paley Center does a lot of that type of stuff.
I never heard of it.
Yeah, if you listen, there's a lot of times that you'll see the cast of different shows are at the Paley Center. I have no idea what it is. I'll have to check that out later. If we lived down in LA, we'd probably know all about it.
Oh yeah, you know we would. We probably would go there. It's probably going to be like a 3-hour thing for us if we lived there. In Akron.
We could get media passes.
Yeah, exactly. One day.
Dude, press passes is great for conventions and everything.
From the ones I have been to with you, yes, they are.
Uh-huh. So, we are trying to get some passes to get to go to a couple of conventions this year, guys, or Super Friends. So, did you put in another email to Akron?
Not yet. I will now.
Okay. Eventually, we'll get a hold of them. If not, I'll talk to Mark and Jim about it this weekend. And actually, speaking of that, anybody who happens to be in the Cleveland or Northeast Ohio area, there is a convention this weekend that myself, my wife Vicky, will be at, representing Geek Watch 1 and Legends of Tomorrow. Legends of Tomorrow. Geek Watch 1, DC Superpowers, and Tales from the Darkness. We will be at Cleveland Concoction at the Cleveland Airport Sheridan on March 10th, 11th, and 12th. It's all day, all 3 days. We don't have a booth set up, but Vicky and myself will be there, and we will have a lot of our information at the Tangent Bound booth, which is actually the main information booth for the convention also. But the Cleveland Concoction is a great place. It's basically an all-fan, all-volunteer-run convention that's more of a fandom convention that usually leans more towards sci-fi fantasy, but they have a large gaming contingent. They have lots of sci-fi, lots of fantasy, lots of Harry Potter this year. They actually even have one. You ever hear of Wizard Rock?
Yes.
Well, they have a Wizard Rock band that's going to be there playing 2 or 3 times. So
okay.
They have all kinds of stuff. There's, if you're a genre fan at all, sci-fi, fantasy, superheroes, you're going to find something you're going to enjoy here. So if you get a chance, come on out, hang out. If you find Vicky and me, I'll have business cards for Superpowers, but I will have Geek Watch 1 stickers on me.
And we always need some good stickers.
Well, I just found out, I was talking to Kylan earlier tonight, we're going to actually record Geek Watch 1 from the convention on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
So, but that's not DC
Superpowers. I still got my sticker on my PS4 that you guys gave me.
Oh, yeah. Those vinyl stickers are awesome.
Yeah. They stay on there for a long time. PS4 can get really hot while playing, but it's still stuck.
So, but that's not DC Superpowers. Why don't we get into some actual DC stuff?
Yes, let's.
Let's start with Supergirl. So, Vernon, why don't you give us the rundown of what happened on Supergirl?
Oh boy, give me a second. Seen that? Been a lot going on, so give me 1 second to remember exactly everything.
Hey,
oh,
one thing I can say: once we get to the end of this, I was right.
Yeah, and we got the return of Mon-El this episode.
Well, he's been in a bunch of the last couple ones.
I'm sorry, not Mon-El. Their father came back again. Yes.
Well, yeah, we have more Dean Cain, which is awesome. I have a feeling we're going to get Dean Cain for the rest of the season off and on.
It seems like we are, because I didn't expect to see him this much this season.
But it's always great anytime you see Dean Cain, but it's also fun that Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher were both in this episode. Not together, but they were both on this episode.
Yes. It's always nice to see them come back. And we also got a Hercules in here, too.
Yes. So, but that's the very end of it. We'll get to Terry Hatcher and Kevin Sorbo. But the actual episode itself was kind of awesome. We saw that at the end of last episode, it looked like Jeremiah Danvers had actually betrayed the entire DEO and his daughters and was on Cadmus' side.
But as I said in the other one, he might be doing that because he's getting blackmailed, or he's doing this just for his daughter's safety.
Exactly. And it looks like that's what it was. It's still, the jury's out whether or not it is. I think he is working for them. And against Cadmus, because that's what it looks like at the end of this one, too. But
yeah,
it
definitely looked like it on the end of this one. He definitely showed his real colors.
At the end of the last episode, he had actually stolen the alien registry from the DEO and gave it to Cadmus. We find out in this episode what they were doing with that. They actually were using the alien registry to kidnap aliens, and Jeremiah had actually talked them into deporting them off the planet instead of killing them all. Because Lillian just wanted to kill them all. She didn't care.
But still, they were literally kidnapping people. The first scene was a family. It kind of reminded me of something about Men in Black.
Yeah.
This family of aliens gets pulled over, and at the time, we don't know they're aliens. You're just like, man, why is this cop being so mean to them? He tells them to get out, and I got some red tape to cover up your broken taillight. No, we're here to kidnap you. Just wanted to pull you over. They grab this family, and it just kind of just took them just so they can be deported.
Exactly. Well, you got to remember, Cadmus hates aliens in general. They're all about Earth only. So they, and if it wasn't for Jeremiah, it looks like they would just kill them all. They just want to kill all the aliens. Because remember, originally that was their plan. They were going to gas everybody.
Yeah.
It would just kill everybody that was not human.
Simple, easy.
But we find where was I going?
I want to help.
Well, we find in the secondary story for this, that Kara is actually working in her day job for the newspaper. She's trying to get the word out that they realize they have to tell the aliens that Cadmus is trying to kidnap them, but they can't expose the DEO.
So, no, they can't, and that's why if she does an interview, she can't say that name.
Exactly. She said she realized that if she writes a story and they get it printed in CatCo, then the aliens will find out that, oh, the alien registry was stolen and people are going to try kidnapping us. The problem is, Snapper, her boss, won't print the story unless she has enough actual credible witnesses. And using just Supergirl is not going to work this time. So
even though
she sets up an interview between Supergirl and Snapper Carr.
Yeah, she can move really fast. That comes in handy for situations like this.
Yeah. The funny thing is, all of Snapper's questions, she couldn't answer anyway, because she could not tell him where she got the information from. She couldn't tell him who she's working with in the government, any of that, because it's all classified. So he still wouldn't print what she wanted to say. So, also, while they're at it, Alex gets suspended from the EO because she's too close to this and realizes she's probably going to be compromised because her dad is so involved in this. So, but while she's suspended, she figures out where Cadmus is at and goes takes care of them herself.
Yeah, and I didn't think she could get that brutal. I was also thinking that guy didn't do anything to deserve all of that. As they said, he didn't even know.
Exactly. She beats down a witness trying to figure out where Cadmus is at. That's the first strike. And then John Jones shows up at the house looking like her dad, like Jeremiah, and tricks her into helping him. Or saying that she's going to help him steal tech from the DEO that he can give to Cadmus so that he doesn't get in trouble and will actually work it against them. Then when she says, yes, I'll help you and not tell anybody, that's when he knows that, no, she can't be objective in this. So he suspends her. But she still keeps working at trying to figure out where this is at. So she finds out where Cadmus is at And she goes to Cadmus to take care of it all by herself, which is not a smart move, but
hey.
But it is interesting. We get the return of, did you recognize the alien that was in the Camaro? It's a guy we've had off and on for a while. It's just an alien named Brian.
The name's kind of familiar coming from the show, but I'm like, okay, man, I'm thinking
he's always in shady dealings and stuff in the show. So, and but she basically trails him since they're kidnapping aliens, and then when Cadmus tries to kidnap him, she's able to figure out where they're at. So she finds out where they're at. And when she gets there, Jeremiah helps her to basically blow up Cadmus's base. And they try to stop the spaceship that's taking off with the aliens to get them off the planet. The problem is, they can't change the controls. They have no control over it. So Kara shows up to help them because they realize if that ship leaves the atmosphere, if the ship leaves the atmosphere, it's jumping light speed and those people are gone forever. No idea where, but they're gone. So Supergirl gets up and basically starts shoving back on the ship. And wears out the engines and starts blowing out the engines because they're trying to get out of the atmosphere, and all of a sudden there's a lot more drag. And basically, together, they end up saving the ship.
And I was happy to see her do that because I remember I was complaining last episode, I don't feel like they used their powers to their full extent. Well, they did in this episode.
Yeah.
As John Jones was saying, I can't read his mind, he can't be read, they wipe his memory, Supergirl does that, I'm thinking to myself, okay, good, this is what we were talking about in the last episode, all right, my issues at least, they fixed it in this one. So, but yeah, and that's by the end of all this, you find out that, well, Mon-El still is up to something very suspicious with somebody tracking him, and this is when Ken was right. At least I think he's right.
That's right. Well, the end of this episode doesn't show that I was right quite. Well, it does show I was right, yes, that Terry Hatcher and Kevin Sorbo are aliens, and they're referred to as Your Highness. And what it is, at the end of the episode, a ship shows up, and it talks about how they've reached the target as they're passing the moon. So, whoever it is, they were heading for Earth. You got an alien ship with Kevin Sorbo and Terry Hatcher as Your Highnesses. So they're king and queen of something.
I definitely think you're onto something.
Well, if you see the preview for next week, they spoil the end of it anyway. Because in the preview, they actually talk about Mon-El, the Prince of Daxam, and you see that the Kevin Sorbo and Terry Hatcher are the king and queen of Daxam, I believe. So that prediction I made a couple months ago, it's all happening.
Mm-hmm.
So Vicky and I were right. So that's what we got coming up next week. And there's only a couple more episodes of Supergirl, isn't there?
Let me check.
It's coming quick.
Yeah, all these shows are really coming quick, but the weeks are just passing us. So.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, how many episodes are in season 2?
I believe there's 20 or 21.
That sounds about right. 22.
22? And this was episode, what, 16 or 17?
This was episode... Whoa.
No, Lethal Weapon I just watched was 17 for this season.
It was I said issue. Well, that was 13.
Oh, wait, so we got a lot of Supergirl still.
Yeah, 15. So
we got like 8 episodes left.
Looks like.
So.
Huh, Kevin Smith is coming back again.
Yes, he is. And also, I saw he tweeted a picture of him and Linda Carter. So it looks like she's actually going to be in one of his episodes that he's directing.
Oh, sweet.
We will have the president coming back, the alien president. Maybe we'll find out who she actually is and if she's actually working for or against us.
Yeah, well, I'm so curious with the eyes glowing. Who the heck could it be, or what is she?
Exactly. So, but moving on from Supergirl, let's move on to Flash. Why don't you go to the synopsis for Flash?
Wally, oh man, this episode is focused on Wally and Savitar. They have a bigger connection than what I thought. This episode really is just basically Savitar trying to get out of the Speed Force, and he's messing with Wally's head for a certain reason. Now, Wally did get his powers from Savitar and Dr. Alchemy, but also we'll find out why they're so connected. And last episode we saw Barry propose to Iris, and of course she says yes.
Yes.
Well, we find out that in the last episode, Barry said, hey, I got this ring from Joe, and, you know, he's okay with it. So we assumed, as the viewers, he asked him, can I marry your daughter? But instead, he just took the ring and did that on the spot when she got in the house. Because he does not want her to die in the future, so...
Yeah, he never asked Papa Joe.
Never did. He's doing all this by way to save her life. This is his intentions. But Later on the show, we see she's not really okay with him marrying her just to save her life. She wants him to marry her because he just loves her and only loves her, not because he loves her and he's trying to save her life, which, once again, I told Ken this at work. I would have still married the dude just because my life might be saved, and we can discuss all this later.
Yeah. Well, she didn't give him back the ring, if I remember right.
She took it off. It's not on her finger anymore.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's going to stay off.
I feel like it is, just for some reason, with this whole predicting thing of Savitar coming back into the play.
Yeah.
But in this episode, we get to see Wally and Barry and Jesse, all three of the Speedsters, doing their superhero thing, running through the town. But they stop for a little bit, and Wally starts to see Savitar. He's like, huh, I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm just seeing him. No biggie. Well, as the episode goes on, they're figuring out that there's the stone that still has a piece somewhere out there. And he's thinking to himself, huh, I thought I put that in the Speed Force, but I guess I didn't. I guess it got out somehow.
Well, you got to think, Savitar talked to them. They got Julian to vibe Savitar again.
Yeah,
and Savitar tells him straight up, you thought you got rid of the stone. Maybe not.
Oh, this conversation with Savitar coming from Julian's body, this was the deepest and creepiest conversation they've had so far.
Yeah, well, they had it twice on this episode.
They did, but that first one was kind of bone-chilling.
Yeah.
And he tells them little hints, little name drops, puts them on a real scavenger hunt. Well, Barry finds a cult, and they have the stone. Now, he doesn't know if this is the stone from what he threw in the future or the same one. Turns out, it is going to be a different stone. So they get back, they do some scans of it, and of course...
Well, no, you're talking about it was the stone box. The box the Philosopher's Stone was in.
And it was not the same one. This is a different stone. But the person who had it the whole time and never told anybody was Caitlin.
Yeah.
And she wanted to do this because she thought she could get rid of her Killer Frost powers. So that causes problems with everybody on the team, including Julian. Julian and her are definitely building a close relationship. And here we even got a kiss out of both of them.
Oh, so, yeah.
They're trying to move forward with their relationship, but this puts a big halt in it because she's not serious, didn't tell him the truth. And plus, after all he's been through with being Dr. Alchemy and having Savitar stuck in his head, you would think the girl that he's falling for would tell him, hey, I got the stone here that you probably don't want in your vicinity because you know how evil it is. So they get the stone, they know about the stone, and as they're running through the city, just Barry and Wally, Savitar comes into actual contact with Wally. He's throwing him against the walls, and this is becoming physical at this point.
And the interesting thing is, Wally was running with Barry to put out a fire. Barry turns around because Wally stopped, and then sees Wally getting thrown around, but he can't see Savitar.
Yeah, only Wally can see him. The only person that has a connection with him as of right now. Besides Julian, that's the only one they can vibe him. So, as the episode goes on, we find out that since Caitlin had the stone, it was there for a reason. And there's a reason why Savitar's only communicating with Wally. And we get this scene with him and Jesse. And she's trying to talk him down and make sure he's okay. But he starts acting really crazy. He sees his mother in the distance. And we all know now, she's dead. So how the heck is he seeing her? Well, just as they did Sisko with his brother. His brother was dead too, but he still somehow had Sisko open up the box and get the stone. Well, the same thing kind of happens for Wally in this episode. Savitar has planned all of this out since the beginning, we find out. He knew Barry wouldn't be fast enough to get him out of the prison and switch places with him. And even if he was, he wants to torture him more than that.
Yeah, well, hang on a second, we do actually get the full thing of what is Savitar's plan, where is he at, all this stuff. Because we find out Savitar is actually locked in the Speed Force.
Right.
At some point way in the future, Barry beats Savitar, but he can't kill him. So the only thing he can think of is
like
to
Barry.
Trap him in the Speed Force itself. That's why he's able to bounce in and out of places. But
he can't stay for too long until the Speed Force sucks him right back in.
But the one thing he needs to be able to get out of the Speed Force is he needs that Philosopher's Stone. Well,
yes.
Unknowingly, when Caitlin broke a piece off of it and kept it, whole idea was when Barry threw the Philosopher's Stone into the Speed Force, Savitar figured, yes, now I have the Philosopher's Stone. The problem was he didn't have the whole stone.
Right. So, I mean,
the idea now is to have someone throw that little piece into the Speed Force without them knowing that that's what he wants them to do.
Right.
And the other thing that he needs to be able to break out is someone has to take his place.
Yeah, you just can't get out of the Speed Force and be free. Someone's going to have to stay in there for you. So he made the plan of making Wally Kid Flash because he knew he could be faster than Barry. And he's been playing this whole time to have a good connection with him and get in his head and make him throw the stone away so he can put the pieces back together. And have Wally switch spots with him because he's fast enough to do so. So Wally's running because his mother tells him you'll never be able to beat Savitar, putting all these doubts in his head. And he says, you know what? I'm going to prove you wrong. Just as Wally would besides thinking. That's why he said you also need a hot-headed and brash youngster to do this. Someone without the experience to know better. So he's running around in a circle and he just keeps going. He eventually breaks into the Speed Force. I want to say something too, Ken. Did you see how easy it was for Wally to do that?
Oh yeah, he just sped up to enough to get activated a breach.
How long did that take Barry to do so in the first season? In the second season,
he had to run inside the particle accelerator as fast as he could until he finally was able to open it up.
And Wally just did this in a small what do you think he was in, about a 20-foot area, just running in a circle and
something like that, yeah,
crack it like that. And as we said before, Wally is the fastest Flash there ever was, so I'm glad they're showing that as he's Kid Flash, he's still faster than Barry. But yeah, he's running a circle and he's able to breach the gap of the Speed Force and he throws the stone back like, ha, take that, now you'll never get out. Then a couple seconds later, we see Savitar just crawling out of the portal and he says, ha, gotcha.
Well, yeah, he had actually, Wally throws the stone in and is standing there looking at it and all of a sudden, something starts sucking him into the Speed Force.
Yep.
As soon as he gets pulled in, that's when Savitar crawls his way out.
And it's Barry that gets there that he surprises to see. He's like, oh no, we didn't think we were going to get you, but Wally messed up here. Wally had a little hiccup.
Just a little.
So Savitar's now free. But the thing is, Barry's able to touch him now. He's able to punch him. He's able to do some physical harm to him, which I thought was great. He even was able to break one of his blades that stabbed him.
Yeah. Well, that's because now Savitar is actually in the real world. He's physically out of the Speed Force. Originally, he was just out in the minds of the people that he was infecting.
And just as we've seen with Wally, why no one else could see him get physically hurt. Same thing was happening with Jay and Wally. Well, wait, no, Jay got the physical one when he came to our world. So it was only Flash that happened to.
Yeah. But, well, you notice now, that's what they said also, that the only people that could see him were people who had a connection to the Speed Force. That's because he was in the Speed Force.
Yeah,
and the speedsters were the only people that could see him.
But so at this point, Wally is not dead, but he might as well be good as dead because they said it's a fate worse than death being trapped in the Speed Force like that for all of eternity. So Joe starts breaking down, crying. Iris, Wally, Jesse, and HR is there for Jesse since he looks more like her father. You know, having anybody comfort her would be good, at least his family. So, all that went down, all that bad stuff happened, and then also Iris, as I said, gave up her ring because she doesn't want their love and marriage to be just out of him saving her life. She doesn't want to be thought of as a person he needed to save. She wants to be his pure and true wife. So things might go about the same way that they went on in the future, since Savitar is still there, but they have to figure out how to get Wally out, which in my opinion, I think Wally's going to figure out his own way to get out of the Speed Force.
I don't know, we'll find out. But, yeah, everything ends on a downer there, but we have some exciting news on the horizon for Flash. We found out this week the synopsis for the Flash coming out in April 27th. The episode is called Abracadabra. Now, anybody who's a DC Comics fan, but especially a Flash fan, should recognize the name Abracadabra.
And we've been talking about it since Rebirth.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got to remember, the first story arc in Titans was all about Abracadabra trying to take out Wally West, the older Wally. So, yeah. But Abracadabra, just as a quick one, he's a villain who's actually from the future. He's the world's greatest magician. But technically, he's actually from the future, using future tech that looks like magic.
Right. I think that's a great concept. It's not real magic. It's just future technology that you don't know anything about.
Exactly. Well, I forget, there was a philosopher that at one point had pointed that out, and that's been shown, that's a classic sci-fi thing, that, and Stargate even used this, that any alien with, or anybody, race with technology sufficiently more advanced than someone else, to that less advanced species, you look like a god. Because you do all these things they can't do.
they still play that up on a lot of sci-fi films. If it's like in BC time and there's an alien race comes down from the sky, that's thinking, oh, we need to worship them, they're gods. And it's like, no, they're just other beings from a different planet.
Exactly. Well, we find out Abracadabra is coming to Flash on March 27th. And according to this, Abracadabra is David Datsmalokan, which he's been in some other stuff. I got to look him up. Why don't you look him up while I talk this over? The name sitting there in front of you?
Yep, still got the article pulled up.
So it says here, the Flash battles Abracadabra, a villain from Earth 19, who makes him a tempting offer. Release him, and Abracadabra will... Well, you can let... Hang on just a second, you can tell me who it is. Release him, and Abracadabra will reveal Savitar's true identity. So who's this actor?
Do you remember the cop from... Or fake cop, he was actually from the asylum in The Dark Knight? And this is the one that Harvey Dent was trying to interrogate and was using his coin and flipping it on him, even though it was both heads. He wasn't actually going to kill the guy, but he wanted to interrogate him to get the information on who killed Commissioner Gordon.
Sounds familiar. I've not seen Dark Knight for a while.
He played in that. He played as the in Prisoners with Hugh Jackman and what's the other guy's name to play in here? Jake Gyllenhaal. He played. No, that wasn't him. I don't know who he portrayed in the movie, but he played in that one, a small role. He also has a small role in Ant-Man. So it seemed like he does a lot of small roles.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be his first big TV gig like this. So he might need to stick on the small screen to get his face really out there. But he's done a lot of different movies in Animals, Sushi Girl, The Dark Knight, Prisoners, and Ant-Man. Those are the ones that popped up.
Oh, he was in Gotham also. I thought he was. I'm trying
to... Oh, really?
Yeah. It was Dwight Pollard. It sounds familiar.
Oh, that was him in Ant-Man? Oh, wow.
Oh, that's where I recognize the face now. The MacGyver TV series that's on right now, he played Murdoch.
Well, look at that. He's in a lot more stuff than what we thought he was.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he definitely has some acting chops then, guys. So
yeah.
I think he'll pull off a good Abracadabra.
So it's going to be interesting to see. And it's interesting, the idea that Abracadabra is actually from Earth 19 instead of from being in our future. Now, the full description's here. It says... Desperate to save Iris. Now, this could be spoilery, guys. So if you don't want to hear a spoiler about Flash coming up, which go ahead and skip forward about 20 seconds or 30 seconds or something like that. But despite Iris, desperate to save Iris, Barry considers taking the deal from Abracadabra to have Abracadabra reveal Savitar's identity. But Gypsy breaches in to capture the villain for her own reasons, and during the melee... Abracadabra manages to escape. Barry is furious with Gypsy furious that Gypsy interfered, but Gypsy refuses to back down, forcing Cisco to take sides. Meanwhile, Julian is a bit cold towards Caitlin, but when she is severely injured in a battle with Gypsy, he rushes to her side.
A battle with Gypsy? Wonder why are they fighting?
I don't know. So this is going to be after the musical episode, which I believe is next week. With the Music Meister, we get the Supergirl Flash crossover, I believe. Or wait a minute, let me look up the schedule. Ah, I gotta bring up Flash on IMDb because then it'll have the actual episode list. There it goes.
Up some stuff for the Flash. They're bringing up some stuff from next week. We're not Flash, but Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay, So this week we had. There it is. Attack on Gotham Central City, Wrath of Savitar. Oh, next week is Into the Speed Force. And then the week after that,
get Wally back?
I believe so. Yeah, that's going to be about that. The week after that, we get Duet, which is the crossover with Supergirl, and then Abracadabra. So that's 3 weeks out from now.
That'll be coming before we know it.
Mm-hmm. So, but that's all I think all we had for Flash for this week. So Flash ends on a big downer this week.
It did. Not good things happen at the end. It didn't happen like that last week either. We saw Savitar pop up in Wally's head then, so he knew it was going to be bad for this week.
But Legends of Tomorrow actually did not end on a downer this time.
No, this one was pretty good. Although until the very, 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 very end, we don't know what they're going to do there. But we got a member back on the team officially.
Yes, we finally get back Rip Hunter fully as Captain Rip Hunter.
It's been a long time because I liked him as a bad guy because he was ruthless. But I need him back on the team. He was doing too much devilish stuff.
Well, we need our captain.
We do.
So, but the episode, go ahead, let everybody know about the episode.
As we found out from, was that last week or week before?
Which one?
the episode before when he was still stuck in the prison and he was telling Gideon to get him out. Well, he has he has an overwrite password that he says that will override her to let him out. And the funny thing is, I'm like, she's a different AI. He had to repeat that two times. The first time he said that, she says, please don't make me do this. Says it again. She opens up all the doors, lets him out, turns on the security lockdown. So everything's going bad for the team as of right now.
Yeah.
But they're able to get Rip and knock him out. And now to get him back into his normal thinking pattern, make him a good guy again, they have to go in his brain and undo everything that the Legion of Doom had done to him.
Well, the other side of the story also, you got to remember, they crash landed in BC, basically the exact same place they had picked up Ray Palmer at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
So back in the Cryptozoic era with all the dinosaurs.
And also, the reason why they're trying to get in his mind as well is because they're looking for the medallion that Citizen Steel's grandfather had.
Yeah, the last piece of the spear.
Right. And as we know, he's put about three members of the JLA, or Justice Society, I'm sorry, scattered them all around time and gave them a certain piece that they couldn't find because only he knew, and he locked it away as his mind. So they're trying to figure out where is it. Well, doesn't Rick destroy it in here when he get out? And then
he destroys the compass that was pointing him to where the pieces are at.
Okay, that's what it was.
So he's the only one that knows where the pieces are now.
And that's when Rory knocks him out. He actually wanted to kill him, but, you know, you can't do that.
Yeah, not allowed to do that.
So Sarah decides to go in his mind because she is the captain as of right now. And then Jack says, I'm not letting you do that alone. So he goes in with her. And then you have Professor Stein going crazy because his boy is now stuck in somebody else's head. And then we have Ray, Vixen, and Citizen Steel all going out there with the dinosaurs.
Because when they crash landed, they lost part of the ship that they need to break back into the time stream.
Right. And so they go out to do so.
And they get to be Gertrude.
freaking Gertrude. It's the dinosaur that Ray named a while ago, and he was stuck there for 6 months.
A mother Tyrannosaurus Rex.
And the reason why she's so mad at him when they get there, well, he was there for 6 months. He needed food. So
right.
He took one of her eggs and cooked it up and ate it. And he says he regrets nothing because that filled him up on protein.
Well, yeah. Well, he said he made like 72 omelets out of that thing.
That was a good source of food.
Oh, yeah. Just like how big a Tyrannosaurus Rex egg would be.
We could fry that up right now and eat it, have it for breakfast, have it for lunch and dinner. But as they're walking around, we do get to find out that Vixen and Citizen Steel may want to move further on with their relationship. At first, this will be, all right, we're not going to date because we're on the same team. But you know what? Why not? Let's be happy. And as that's happening, back on the ship, they are in Rip's mind, and it is dark. The reason why he wants to kill every one of his friends is because the Legion of Doom in his head made all of his friends seem as bad people. They are trying to kill him. And he's actually locked away in a prison in his mind that's on the ship. And we also got to see Gideon in human form.
Yes. And they actually used the actress who plays the voice of Gideon.
Mm-hmm. I was waiting to see her. I'm like, they're going to have to show this in some way. They can't just keep you on here as only the voice.
Yeah.
So this was her breakout role as a AI, but as a human form. So you get Jax sees Gideon. She's sending out SOS in the dream world, or in Rip's mind. And in the prison, you find White Canary in there along with him because the other versions of them in his head have knocked her out and destroyed her bracelet to get her out back into the real world. Because Jax and her have these electrical shock bracelets on them to get them out if they ever need to wake them up. Well, she can't wake up anymore because they destroy it. And she's trying to get close to him, and he somehow backs her away with this force power like he's got, you know, some type of mental abilities.
Almost like it's his mind they're in.
Yeah, strange, right? How he can control that stuff. Well, it takes her to let him know, you can control this. This is your mind. You're the only one that's going to be able to get us out of this. And as she's trying to tell him this, and then you got Jax working with Gideon, in the real world, you get Vixen. This is funny. Roy is a great chef in the prehistoric time. The dude can cook anything, so he's like, let's have a go.
Oh, you mean Ray.
So
Ray is.
Ray. What did I say?
I think he said Roy. Or Rory.
Rory. It's the R's. I'm going to call him Adam from now on. So the Adam, he goes out and he gets all this iguanas to make some soup. And as he's leaving, you get Vixen and Citizen Steel trying to have a little bit of them me time.
Yeah,
I
what's
guess.
Up
not
with
really
that? Anytime that they go camping, the two of them can't stay out of each other.
It's like the Force just calls out to them. On Vixen's side, I can understand that. With Citizen Steel, why?
Control yourself. It's just camping.
It's just camping. So he's making up the soup, and as she leaves off to get more wood, Adam's telling Citizen Steel, you might want to be careful starting a relationship with her. It's like, oh, we'll be fine. We won't make it awkward for no one. He's like, no, I've dated somebody on the ship. Believe me, I'm not mad at that. What I'm mad about is you messing up her life. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? I'm not that bad of a guy. He's telling him, no. See, we're all legends for a reason. We got picked off our own time zone in our own era, and no one really cared if we were leaving or not. With her, she's a part of history. She's in the Justice Society. And she's going to have a daughter that also, or granddaughter that also has this amulet that's on her neck.
Now, do you know where, when he, because he says he's met her granddaughter. Do you remember when he met her?
That was on the CW seed.
Yeah, that was in the Vixen animated series, which is awesome. This actually ties into the animated series. This is the first, one of the few times they've actually done this.
And I'm glad, literally, I just started watching season two of Vixen last night. So, good timing for me.
Exactly.
I was able to pick up on that. But
it's on season two. Did you watch the whole thing last night?
Not the whole thing.
Okay.
I got finished tonight. I was getting very, very sleepy at this point. So, it was just like on my television after a while. I'm like, oh, I'll turn off my laptop later. But, he's telling him she's going to have a grandchild and she's going to help us later on in the future. If you mess anything up, who knows what will happen. And she's going to have to hold this for her her tribe and her family because it will get destroyed after a while. But you cannot tell her that. If you tell her, that'll mess up the timeline right then and there. So
exactly.
Citizen Steel is going to have to either, one, not go any further with this relationship, or two, don't tell her and everything will be fine. Now, here's my theory, Ken. Who's to say Citizen Steel might not be one of the relatives of the newer Vixen?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. How do you know he's not her granddaddy?
Exactly, because they never said that. And I'm not going to lie, I can totally see that happening. I really see something like that happening in this show.
Yeah.
But so that's the big thing with them, and I love that little tie-in that they did with the animated series on the Seed, and also that ties in with everything else of the universe of the television shows. But now we're going to move on back into the main story. So they're in Rip's mind, and their other versions of the team are trying to kill everyone else that's from the real world. But Gideon's not being hurt at this at all because, one, she's an AI, and two, it's in Rip's head. And if you find out, I think Rip – what's going on with that? Can you describe what's going on with him and Gideon?
There's something a little more than just captain and ship.
Yeah, I know a captain loves his ship, and he will die for his ship with his ship. But I never saw them get any type of sensual feelings toward each other.
Well, that's because they couldn't before. She was just metal and plastic and glass.
Which makes it more weird.
Yeah, now she's actually got a physical form in his mind.
Right, in his mind, I guess he fell in love with Gideon. So basically, Sarah and Jax tried to kill the other versions of them on the ship. It doesn't work. And he's saying, hey, I guess we can't kill the images and these thoughts that are in Rip's head. And Sarah says, no, we can't do that, but Rip can. So Rip comes in there with Gideon, and he stops them from hurting his friends. And the only reason why he started doing this was because Gideon said, I know you don't know what you're doing right now. You don't know what's real and what's not, but they are real. They're your friends. And he starts getting these visions. And he stops them, he blows away the evil thoughts in his head, and then Sarah and Jax are able to wake up. Now, the thing is, Rip is still asleep, and they're waiting for him to wake up, and his brain is collapsing at this point because everything that the Legion of Doom put in his head are now coming to light. He knows that was fake, there were just fake visions in his head, so his real memories are beginning to come in, so the fake ones are collapsing. Well, he's still in his mind talking to Gideon because he's never seen her in real form. And Sarah said she's hot. Jax thought she was beautiful. So Rip has fell in love with her. And I guess he's always had something for her because he loves his ship. But it's a ship. He can't actually have any physical contact with her. So in his mind, he does not want to let her go. And she even says, you need to let me go or you won't be alive in the real world. So he gives her one kiss, and that's the last time he'll probably be able to see Gideon in her human form. Then he wakes up.
But when he wakes up, it is now the original Rip Hunter.
Yes, our real Rip's back. Our captain is back. He's nice again. He's wearing his coat that we've been waiting for him to put back on this whole season. And it's funny because Sarah says, I'm glad it still fits you. He says, you know what? On a filmmaker's diet, you're not going to gain any weight. So yeah. Everything's going well. And once Sarah leaves the room, he touches the ship and he tells Gideon, I'm sorry for what I put you through. And he also told Sarah and everybody else on the crew he's sorry for what they did. But here's the catch. Gideon says, are you saying all of this just because to flatter me or because of our kiss? And he's like, wait a minute. How the heck?
So somehow the real Gideon was actually in his mind.
Which makes sense. I'm pretty sure somewhere down the line he might have forgot. He probably made him and Gideon's mind or linked their mind up together with her AI.
It's possible.
He is from the future, so I can imagine that happening. So that was the episode of Legends, except for the very end of it. We get some hints from NASA.
Yeah, for next week.
Yeah, this is the Reverse Flash.
Thawne.
Yes, he was talking to somebody from NASA, and I don't know from what time period.
It was the early 70s, I believe, one of the last Apollo missions.
Yeah, it was for an Apollo mission. I want to see who was it there. They had a name on them, but I don't remember exactly who it was. Ah, man.
Well, what set this up was that Rip, they asked him, okay, so do you remember where Captain Steele in the last piece of the spear is? And he says, yes, I know exactly where he is. And that goes to the flashback or over to where Eobard Thawne is in the 1970s at NASA.
And so
plan. Exactly. I don't know if Captain Steele's on the moon or if he's working at or if he's at NASA or what the plan is, but I'm sure we'll find out next week.
Yeah, but we will. And of course, he's up to no good. But hopefully everyone lives in this, and I'm still waiting to see Captain Cold come back this season.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where we're at next week. We're not going to the moon next week because remember, next week they're – Or no, that's on Flash. The Flash next week has all the flashbacks with all of the things that are in Barry's mind, and all the returning guest stars are coming back next week. So next week on here, I didn't see the preview for it. But that was Legends. So Arrow actually took a break this week. We mentioned that earlier. And Powerless last week didn't. Now remember, we're usually about a week behind on Powerless because Powerless is on TV while we're recording this. So right. Powerless was off last week, but we do have some Powerless news for upcoming show. We found out, it was released this week, that Batman
is
coming.
70 years.
Whoa,
different
hang on.
Versions of Batman have been
adapted. No. There we go. But we know Batman is coming to Powerless of a sort. Adam West, the TV's original Batman, is coming to Powerless in a couple of episodes coming up. Now, Adam West has already kind of been on the show before. They actually had in one of the early episodes, they had a commercial for Wayne Securities with Adam West actually narrating it. But we get to find out that according to the show, let me see where we're at here. Yeah. In the show, some mayhem and destruction in Gotham City will force the parent company, Wayne Industries, to make some hard cuts for the future of the company. And that's when the chairman of Wayne Industries, Dean West, will come to town to deliver some bad news to their subsidiary in Charm City. Now, we don't know what episode this is going to be in, but we know it's coming up pretty soon. And the actual official synopsis this is for the next episode. So that's all we know is that he's actually playing the CEO of Wayne Industries, Dean West. So Adam West is coming in as Dean West. So, and this time it's not just voice. He's actually, because we've already seen him as Batman in the Batman 66 animated show, The Caped Crusader, or... What was the name of the movie they just put out last fall? Return of the Caped Crusaders or something like that?
Yeah, Return of the Caped Crusader.
So I've not seen that one yet. It looks awesome, and from what everybody says, it was a good show. So
yeah, I heard good things about it. Even my buddy, he got it and said it was pretty good. And I don't think he watched too much of the old one like that, but he said definitely pay it justice.
Okay. So that we know that's coming up in the next couple of episodes of Powerless. So even if you're not a fan of Powerless, you could at least watch it to see Adam West on it. So I fell down a rabbit hole on a different thing. But that's all we have for TV for this week, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I know you had a couple stories in the cinematic news.
Yes, I did. We got some pretty good stuff out for movies. Now, this is dealing with the new Batman movie, and no, this isn't anything bad. This is a good thing. Let me see if I can get this last name right.
They need to stop doing that.
I went on a website, too, so I'm like, is that going to be me or you? Joe Manganiello talks Deathstroke, and he praises Ben Affleck. Now, this is what he had to tell the RI Magazine. This is my character, and I'm an exciting one, and has the capacity, I think, to be the great villain, Manganiello said. And what all great ones can do to polarize an audience. When I was a kid, I just always rooted for a villain. As a kid, I always wanted to root for him, and I think the fans will too. That's all I had to say about that. They do say in here, the Magic Mike actor, I forgot he played in that movie, also is not looking at any other recent memory of the character Deathstroke. He wants to only focus on the one he's playing right now, so he hasn't even watched the Arrows in a while so he can figure out how to play the character. He's doing this just as a new thing, which I think can be good and bad at the same time, in my opinion. I think it's good to brush up on your history, but he will be filming with the cast and crew of Ben Affleck and produced by Geoff Johns. And also he said, I am very excited. For all my years, I've been very excited to work with everyone. Ben Affleck makes a great film, and he's been great as Batman. Geoff Johns currently is a really fun guy and to hang around with, and is great. Has a great grasp for steering the wheel that the Titanic of the DCEU is going for. Knowing what they will have planned in the future, I think fans will really love it. End quotes. So, good things are being said about the Batman film so far. We'll see how this goes on down the line. But for now, it seems everything's going well.
Well, they have one more quote down towards the bottom, too. Manganiello also says that the movie will start shooting whenever those
pieces are in
place. All the pieces are in place. And we know this is going to be something that we're proud of. What we're not going to do is be backed into a start date, scrambling to get everything off the ground just to get it off the ground. When we start shooting, we'll start shooting it. Or when we start shooting it, we'll start shooting it. It will be soon, I can say that. So it sounds like they're about ready to go.
Yeah, I think I'm glad they're not rushing this, because as we said, they canceled Flash for right now. They took that off the table for the dates. We don't know for yet. They're still making it, but we have no clue when they're going to be shooting. And I think that's a good move, because if they kept pumping out stuff like this, it would not end well.
Yeah.
And they do not want to make a crappy Batman film. He's been doing too good in the past couple of years. And even as we said in the Batman Dawn of Justice, he was one of the few good things out of that movie. So, definitely waiting for that. I did hear some other news this week. I want to see if I can actually find an article for this.
For which one?
For Wonder Woman.
Oh, okay.
Nothing too big. I can't really find an article for it. I've seen this Monday on a YouTube video, but I heard that a couple of the director, she wanted some people from the news press to come out and see the Wonder Woman screening, some screenings, not the whole thing. But want to see some clips, walk on set and see how everybody was acting, see how everybody was feeling about their movie role. And they are really passionate about it. They think this will be pretty good. To sum up what they were saying, it felt something like a Marvel movie. It had its serious moments. It has funny moments with humor. They said there's definitely a lot of humor in this movie. A lot. Way more than was in Batman vs. Superman. It feels like it's probably got the humor of what was in Suicide Squad, but it's for a Wonder Woman film. And it's definitely got some serious tones in there. Her fight scenes look awesome. Her costume looks awesome. Gal Gadot's doing a great job as Wonder Woman. Now, I did hear from critics some mixed reviews, but from people that were on set, they sound like they are going to enjoy the movie pretty well. At least there were scenes they showed them that they enjoyed very well.
Yeah. So. Well, I think what it is the critics, the movie critics, may not find it great, but I'm thinking this is something that comic book fans and the general public are going to like.
Yeah, and I mean, the critics been going in this week on certain franchises, I'll say.
Yeah.
I don't agree with, never really agree with it when the critics just completely rip something to shreds. If it doesn't deserve it, not that bad. So, also, there's been a little bit of a picture. I'm going to have to repost this, guys. I already put the stereo picture up. We'll get to that later. But there's a little nod to Wonder Woman in the film where she grabs a guard's hand and looks like she probably breaks his hand and throws him across the room. That was actually taken from straight out of the books. Same thing happens. She grabbed a guy's gun, cracked his hand, threw him across the room. So I wonder how many of those we're going to get in this movie. But that was just a little mention of what's all the good things people have said about Wonder Woman so far. So that's given me a lot more hope. At first, I didn't know how to feel about it. I've been excited to see the movie, but now I'm even more excited to see it.
Oh yeah, this is nice gonna, hopefully this is going to be a good start for the or good place to move on from the DC universe.
Yeah, and it's good to hear from fans too instead of the critics. See what they feel. If they like it, then I'll probably like it. The critics, on the other hand, I can't agree with all the time.
Yeah. And then you had one more in this cinematic news?
Yes, I do. And I figured something like this would happen, guys, after the whole recent
I was debating whether or not to even put this one in there, but it is an actual news story.
It is. Well, DC recently said they will go 100% with making a rated R superhero movie. And I know we discussed this before on the show about them making maybe Batman or Superman rated R. We didn't know at the time. And then they also did the Killing Joke, and recently they just made the Justice League Dark animated film into a rated R property. So, with the recent success, as I said, I figured this would happen, of Marvel's Deadpool and Logan, fans have many questions about if DC will make a rated R film. Well, the DCEU animated verse has also made two direct-to-DVD animated rated R films, which was the Killing Joke and the Justice League Dark films. We are totally, they said as fans, we totally want some rated R live action flicks. An insider
I'm more cross to, I'm not sure about that.
I am, because as they said right here, insider from Warner Brothers DC Films recently quotes saying, 100% yes, with the right character or characters. Meaning, like me and Ken, we both agree. Superman does not need to be rated R. Batman really doesn't even need to be made rated R. Neither does Wonder Woman. I feel like the main seven, they don't need to go that dark. There's no
Justice
need
League
to do
does
that.
Not need to go that dark.
Now, there are some properties in the DC universe that should have a rated R film.
Or like they could. Lobo. They don't have to, but they could.
Lobo needs to be rated R. I'm going to say that. That's like making Deadpool rated PG-13. That just doesn't cut it. You got to go R with that. And I think even if they made a Deathstroke movie, that could be rated R. And I also feel that the Suicide Squad could be rated R, but Lobo's a movie you're going to have to make that dude rated R because there's too much violence in there. If anybody's going to see somebody's skin getting blown off and growing back, that's already going to be too violent.
Yeah.
So with certain characters, it can work. Last week, movie tickets for the franchise on Fandango.
That's sorry about the other movies, yeah.
Yeah, but they did say the closest thing that we got to a rated R live-action film from DC will probably just be the Batman versus Superman Dawn Justice film so far. So we'll see what happens in the future. But right now, with their lineup, I don't think they're going to go anything too gritty until we get these next movies pumped out. But then again, we didn't know we were going to get a Nightwing film. We don't know when that's dropping either. That could
They're starting on it. That doesn't mean we're still going to get it.
No. But I'm saying at this point, that could come out before Flash, all we know.
Yeah.
So, but we'll see what they have in line, but they are willing to make a rated R film now. And I knew after Logan came out, they were a little iffy on it with Deadpool, said maybe superhero films can't really do that. Then Logan came out, made a good hit, and it was rated R. So DC can do it with the right characters. But definitely possible. I'd be willing to pay my money for it if it's the right character. If I see a Wonder Woman movie rated R, I don't think I would be too interested because I wouldn't see a purpose of making it rated R.
And like I said, a Batman or a Superman, you don't need that to be rated R.
Oh, no. Nah. You really didn't. But the Ultimate Edition of Batman vs. Superman was, like they said, dark as they would go. But I still don't see why that was really rated R. Me and you talked about there was nothing in it that was R-rated worthy.
I don't think it was R-rated, was it?
No, it was the Ultimate Edition, but they said there was going to be one that would have been it. And I can see why they said it was a little bit more violent. They showed a little bit of nudity. They cursed a little bit more in that film, the extended edition. So I feel like they had to make it either rated R if they were going to put it in films, or make it do the unrated cut on DVD just because of Ben Affleck's butt. So,
moving a little into kind of collectibles news.
Yes, this is a very interesting story, guys. I put this out on our Instagram already, and I've seen a couple of you guys already liked it, so thank you.
I was looking for these. They're not quite in the stores yet, but the DC superheroes are actually invading the cereal aisle.
Can you believe that?
Now, DC... go ahead.
Didn't they already do the Chef Boyardee or ravioli or something like that?
Oh, yeah, they had the ravioli cans. But now General Mills is getting into the swing of things. It says the press release for this says, if you ever needed another reason to eat cereal, here's one more. And what can only be dubbed the best idea ever, DC Entertainment and General Mills are partnering with DC's most powerful superheroes with some of your favorite cereal brands to give you the ultimate in cereal entertainment. Although cereal entertainment might not be an actual theme, the cereal box covers, as well as the four original custom comic books featuring the DC's Justice League characters inside them, will definitely be something you'll want to check out. Now, the cereal box designs are actually, the cereal box will be designed by many of today's best DC artists. The Honey Nut Cheerios, Busby, they have the covers for all but one of the cereal boxes sitting here in this one picture. Busby from Honey Nut Cheerios is being drawn as Batman with art by David Johnson. Lucky Charms Lucky the Leprechaun as Green Lantern with art by, the art is done by, Joe Quinones. The Cocoa Puffs Sonny the Bird is done as The Flash with art by Carl Kesher. Trix Rabbit as Superman with art by Amanda Connor. Multigrain Cheerios, this is the only one that Multigrain Cheerios doesn't really have a mascot. So
I figured they could have picked somebody else, but then I was thinking there isn't any other female cereal holder.
Well, this one has Wonder Woman actually on the box, but done by Neil Adams. And then the one they didn't show is actually Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but this is only the family size, is going to feature the Crazy Squares as Aquaman, Cyborg, and Green Lantern with art by Tony Daniel. Now, the back of the boxes, when you turn them over, it says DC fans will want to collect all the cereal boxes to piece together a Justice League 5-part mural on the back of the boxes, penciled by Ivan Reese, with inks by Joe Prado and colors by Marcelo Maiolo. Now, the four original comic books are 24-page comics of the full-size comics from DC's Custom Creative Studio, and they include Superman Power Play, written by Tony Bernard and art by Jerry Ordway, which is awesome to see Jerry Ordway doing Superman art again.
Yeah.
Batman Dark Reflections, written by Fabian Nicieza, with art by Rick Leonardi. Wonder Woman Truth Hurts, by Ivan Cohen, and penciled by Dune Bryman. And Aquaman Alien Justice, by Tony Bernard, and art by Tom Grumman. And they have the covers of the four books in a picture down here. Then down here, they have, we're excited to bring DC's Justice League to a broad new audience on the cereal aisle with the big G, stated Kelly Lee, DC's custom creative and advertising. This is just another example of how our team can bring top-notch comic talent together to tell original stories with DC characters and organically incorporate top-tier brands like General Mills. So this is looking interesting. Like I said, I was at the store earlier because I had heard about this earlier this week and looked at these are not available in the stores here yet, or at least not in the Giant Eagle I went to. But I'm looking for them. I might want to actually pick up at least one box of each of these.
Dude, same here.
Oh, no, I got to buy cereal.
Yeah, I eat cereal every now and again, but I'll stock up on these, not going to lie. I'll do it.
Well, that's like I don't eat a whole lot of cereal, but I have one of each of the four different Star Wars cereal boxes that they had. They actually had Star Wars cereal. They had one had Darth Vader, the other one had Yoda on it. Then they did one with Kylo Ren and I believe BB-8.
I remember those coming out. I think, didn't we have some at work too?
Quite possibly.
But I eat all these cereals. I eat Cocoa Puffs. I eat Honey Nut Cheerios. I eat Lucky Charms. I eat Multigrain. I don't eat Trix, though. I haven't been a fan of Trix since I was a kid. So,
well, and then a lot of people will agree that one of the greatest cereals of all time is Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yeah, and that was the one I was going to get to last. That's also the other one. The only, like I said, the only one I don't eat is the one with Superman on it. But I'll buy it.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna look weird in Acme just with all these boxes of cereal. Like, why? You don't know why.
Oh no, they can look at the box and see why.
Yeah. Like, don't judge me. You better not judge me.
And then next, we actually had to change. We usually talk about DC video games every once in a while, but we actually have just in general DC games category. And you have the first story in this one.
Yes. As I've said before, it's something I've been talking about for a while now. This is Injustice 2, and they just keep pumping. They said they'd be pumping out new stuff each week up until the game comes out. So we got some new characters in this reveal. We actually do get Reverse Flash in here. Now, before we just could play it as a skin, this is a story mode they were showing us, so I don't know if you'll still be able to play as Reverse Flash, actually, with some different movesets, or you're still going to be playing Flash with a different skin, but he was shown to be his own character in the game. At least he'll get a different voice actor. We got Hal Jordan coming back, definitely now. He's confirmed. Green Arrow's a new character. We thought he might be, but then again, he died in the last game, so we don't know if this is going to be one from our Earth, or they resurrect him. This is a prequel. We don't know, but he is going to be in the next game. And also, another character they put in there was Captain Cold. If you pause at the right time, you can see Captain Cold in the background with Grodd and the other bad guys. So
cool.
Those are new characters in there. So we got Flash villains, really, in this one.
Awesome. I'll have to upgrade my game system so I can get this game. I don't know.
I mean, they got it for Xbox One, and they have it for PS4. But if you get it for PS4, Ken, we can play.
Yeah? Well, that means I got to get a PS4. I would probably end up buying an Xbox One first.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I still have the Xbox 360, so.
I do, too. I'm still playing Marvel Ultimate Alliance on that thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have we're usually Xbox here because my wife loves Halo.
See, I just got Xbox really for Gears of War.
Yeah.
That was the first game my cousin.
Oh, that's another game that she's a fan of. That she loves.
I like that better than Halo. For me.
She loves Halo. She loves Gears of War. She loves Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed you can get on anything though.
Mm-hmm.
So she's more the action and first person shooter games. I'm more the like role playing games and stuff like that.
See, I'm more of just a fighting game guy.
Yeah.
I'll do action games sometimes, but it depends on what kind of genre.
Oh, she likes the button mashers too.
Oh yeah.
So.
But that's it for Injustice. Like I said, not too much. Also, this trailer went more in depth with the story. It seems that Batman can't. Batman can't fight off Superman by himself, so he's going to have to get some help. And that's when Flash, Green Arrow, Harley Quinn, Black Canary, and Green Arrow all come back. I can't remember if I said Green Arrow or Green Lantern, but both of them are on the team to help him. I don't know who else is going to join him. We did get a big glimpse of Dr. Fate in this game as well. Now, I don't know if he's on the team with Batman or he's just fighting Superman because magic and Kryptonians don't mix.
Yeah.
But this game looks awesome. Also, the graphics for this are way better than the PS3 version. And we did have it on PS4 as well, but I think it first came out on the PS3, I want to say.
They probably just ported it over.
Yeah, I think they did. I don't really know at the time. I know it was a time when they were crossing over from PS3 to PS4, and I was waiting to buy a PS4 at that time. But, yeah, graphics are a lot better. This is, like, the story mode is going to be great. Once again, might be better than the first one. But this game has a lot of promise, and now I'm going to have to pre-order it. It's too good not to.
Yeah. Well, the next one is not in video games. This is actually in a card game realm, kind of. Anybody who's actually ever tried out the DC Deck Builder game from Cryptozoic Games, I have the Teen Titans version of this, and I have the two-player Batman vs. Joker kit or decks. But it's a fun game to play. But Cryptozoic has been on a roll lately, it says, with the DC-themed games. Most recently, they just released the Batman the Animated Series Almost Got Him game that has been sold out and flying off of their website. And the local board game cafe here, the Multi Meeple, that was actually their game of the month for, I believe, for February, was Almost Got Him, the Batman Animated Series game. But Cryptozoic announced today, as of, let me see the date on this. If it's going to say today, then we need to know what date they're talking about. And it figures there's no date on the article. But they said Cryptozoic just announced that they will be releasing a DC deck building game organized play kit. The kit is designed for the popular DC deck building game series and includes instructions for retail stores or comic book stores or anything like that, as well as prizes for participants. Now, Cryptozoic and the WB plan on releasing kits biannually, And this particular kit will be launched alongside the DC deck building game Multiverse Box and this summer. And then the next kit will be released in winter fall of 2017. Now, for more information, you go to Cryptozoic's website. If you just Google search Cryptozoic, you'll more than likely come up with them. And the information mostly for hosts of the games. Now, this is going to be basically what they're releasing here is it looks like it's a tournament kit. It shows the store how they suggest to run a tournament for this game. Now, these games it's a deck-building game, so it's not like Magic the Gathering or Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh! Where you collect the cards, build your own deck, and bring it with you. This, you sit down to play the game, and you build the deck as you play the game. And you build it all off the same draw pile. You add villains, you add heroes to your deck, and you have goals to actually to win the game. Like I said, I have the Teen Titans version of it. All the versions can be added together so that you can add the different types of heroes. I believe they had two releases of the original game already, which had different heroes and villains in them, and then the Teen Titans one that came out, and then I have the two-player game, like I said, which is Batman vs. Joker. Now, have you ever played any of these games?
No, I have not.
We're going to have to rectify that situation.
I've seen people play them, but I haven't played them myself.
Yeah, what... It's, I guess, very similar to a lot of the other deck-building games that are out there. I also have the Resident Evil one and one of the expansions for it. So, it's a very popular genre in gaming right now. So
everywhere we go to, especially Multimeeple, they're always playing board games, so.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if they'll have that there.
Yeah. I know they have the deck builder game, so. It says the kit will be sold exclusively for the local game and hobby stores at $25. So anybody who actually goes to gaming or hobby stores or your comic shop, ask them about this and see if they'll schedule an actual some organized play for it. So, yep. And then that actually brings us to the end of our news list.
Man,
that came up quick.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
But that's okay because we have some actually pretty good comics on the reviews this week.
Yeah, we do. This was some great stuff. We got some origin.
Oh, yeah.
A couple different, kind of two origins, really.
Yeah, well,
we
kind of got three, because Batman had two origin stories of a sort.
In itself, yeah.
But before we get to the three we're actually doing, these were the comics for March 1st, 2017. But I got to give an honorable mention to Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn number 15, because we get the first appearance in the Rebirth, since Rebirth started, of Power Girl. And Harley Quinn number 15. So I'm not going to do a full thing, but I know anybody who's not reading Harley, this one here has me rolling and laughing in tears every time I read it just about. It is a hilarious story. It's something that it's weird because it's actually in the DC universe, but it's hard to take it serious. So
yeah, every time you show me that at work where you send me some pictures of what panels are, I'm like, I can't believe that happened. This is the funniest thing out of DC right now.
Including at this point, there's the villain in this is actually from a place called Strata, which I guess is a world inside of our world. And he and Harley are sitting in a park, and a rabid squirrel comes up and bites him on the finger, and he kind of gives it a flick, and this squirrel goes flying across New York City. And eventually hits Power Girl in the head as she's flying around across the city. So that's the type of shenanigans you get in this book. And there's like three or four stories going on all at once at the same time in this book. So it has been, like I keep saying, out of all the Rebirth titles, this is the one that has surprised me the most, that I'm actually enjoying this book. It's not one I was originally planning on picking up, but
yeah, I didn't think we were either.
Do you want me to start on the first one, or do you want to start on the first one?
You can start on the first one.
Okay, well, we're starting with Batman number 18. And this is the I Am Bane storyline. It's actually part 3 of the I Am Bane storyline. And this one, you get a parallel side-by-side journey of Batman and Bane from when they were children to now.
Yeah.
You have Bane going after Batman. Obviously, we know this because Batman stole the Psycho Pirate. And the Psycho Pirate was what was helping Bane stay off of Venom.
But now there's no need for him to. Now yes. He just wants revenge on Batman. That's what his heart set out on.
Well, this whole book is told in side-by-side panels of an event from Bane's backstory and an event from Batman's backstory. And it starts with both of them, their mothers dying when they were young.
Yeah, and immediately... you hear Bane saying this offer, and you see them talking to each other, but you see Bruce holding his mother's hand crying. Same for Bane.
Yes. Then you find Bruce Wayne when he was at his parents' murder. You see Gordon come and take him and say, come with me. This is a, she's not. She lives in your heart now. Everything's fine. You're going to be okay." And then the other side of the panel has one of the prisoners in the prison tell him, "Hey, kid, come on. These things happen. No one's going to live forever. Suck it up, basically."
Yeah, and then the next panels, you get both boys looking back at their mother's dead corpse as their tears running down their face. Gordon's telling Bruce, "That's not her. She lives in your heart now." And as Bane was getting told, "What do you need to look at that for? She's gone now."
Exactly. You're not going to be here long anyway.
Yeah.
Next, you see Bane in a prison cell and Bruce in the police station and someone talking in the other room. One's talking about how, well, he has a butler that's going to come and take care of him. Bane is, "What are we going to do with this kid? He doesn't belong here." So they both have a place to go, and they find, well, you got a place to go now, and you find Bruce is actually being taken back home, where Bane is basically being put in the hole.
Yep, and as Bruce found a cave, Bane always had a hole.
Exactly.
He always had the darkness.
We saw a couple of issues ago where he actually grew up in a pit that filled with water every night. So he had to swim all night to hopefully he wouldn't drown.
Mm.
So next up, you get Batman fighting Bane in the present time, and Bane's flipping out because Batman told him, "No, I'm not going to give you the Psycho Pirate." Then you go back to the two of them together, sitting there in lonely and quiet, sitting there looking for Mom, talking to their mother, both of them at the same time, basically.
And she's gone, and you hear Bruce saying, "Mother, will you leave the light on, please? I'm sorry, Mother. I didn't mean to. Just please leave the light on." And then you hear Bane saying the same thing, really, saying, Mommy, come back." And they're just talking to their dead mother, and they're not even there. And as they keep looking in the darkness, Bruce, you hear saying, "Mother, will it only be tonight? Can you just leave the light on just for a little bit?" Then you hear Bane saying, Mom, I'm scared. I need you." And both of them, as tears start running down their eyes, they're both crying to their mothers that's not there.
Mm-hmm. The next page, we get both of them, like, what they're eating. Bruce Wayne sitting at the grand dining room table, and Bane sitting in the bottom of a cell with dead fish that he's eating.
They're still talking to their mom. That's not there. Bruce is saying how Darren's Gray is delicious. Thanks for making that. And then Bane's saying how much he likes fish, and he's blessed to have it. Or not blessed to have it. I don't know how it bleeds.
Yeah. Well, he's talking about how he doesn't like fish, and then he doesn't like how it bleeds, yeah. Then you get Bruce and Bane, where Bruce is sitting in the library reading a book. Bane is sitting there looking for something to do in the bottom of a cell. Both of them start working out. there's a parallel journey the whole time.
And Bruce has his own gym he can go to exercise, when Bane is just on that wet ground of his.
Exactly. Then you get back to the two of them fighting back and forth, and how Bane's like, "Do you know who I am? You tell me no, I can't have this. I'm not a joke. I'm not a riddle. I'm not a bird or a penguin or a cat. I'm not a scarecrow or a puppet. I'm not a broken friend of yours. I'm not your regretful teacher." And it says, "I am not a kid's fairy tale. I am not a circus act." All this stuff that what he's not at, but he's like, he's not a rich boy.
He's also throwing some disses at Batman's other rogues.
Yeah, that's all that is. He names most of the major rogues for Batman and says, "I am not one of these." Then you get to the point where they're both teenagers, and it shows Bruce Wayne still talking to his mother, and talking to his mother while he's training and doing high wire and climbing up cliffs, where Bane is training in his pit, doing handstands, swimming all night. Bane is strengthen himself, trying to break down the walls, where Bruce is learning how to break chains and how to pick locks. You get the two of them fighting. Bruce is kicking a tree until it falls over. It breaks the tree. Bane is kicking a wall until he busts a hole in the wall so he can escape.
These are some strong guys.
And then Bane says, we're back in the modern times. Bane is telling him all those things that he is not. He says, "What I am Bane." And it says, "Now, give me the pirate," because he's been beating down Batman this whole time. Batman's bloody, looks almost broken, and Batman's still saying no. Then you get to the point where they're going back to side-by-side. At this point, Bane is an adult. Batman is an adult. Batman's beating on the Joker. Bane's beating on a villain. Wait a minute. I think we missed the one line I was looking for here. Yeah. when Batman or when Bruce breaks down the tree and Bane busts the hole in the wall, the Bruce, as he's fighting, says, "I swear by the spirits of my parents to avenge their deaths by spending the rest of my life warring on all criminals." Bane, as he's kicking through the wall, "I swear by the blood of my parents to avenge their deaths by spending the rest of my life conquering all criminals."
Mm-hmm. And as just reading this whole book, you just see the similarities between Batman and Bane. I see at one point back in the day they thought they could be brothers.
Exactly. It's so similar the way they're doing this. Then they show Batman beating on criminals, Bane beating on criminals. Batman built a family around him for strength, and how he tells them, "You are my true strength." Then Bane, working with the doctors, looking for the venom to give him strength. Then you get...
As they both get older, you see Batman on a gargoyle saying, "You see, Mother? One step, then another." And then you see Bane on top of prison while it's burning down. "All of it, Mommy. The whole world. It's just food for the sharks."
Then we get to parallel still of Gordon telling Bruce about Batman. And then, what's his name, Bird? Yeah, I think Bird is the Bane's right-hand man telling him about the Batman. And basically their story, how they're similar stories, how Bane was born and raised on the worst place on the planet. They say he survived something that no one could because of that, people say he can't be brought down. Bird tells him the exact same story from a different perspective, that he's the best out there. Something drives him that no one can touch. People say that means that he can't be brought down. And both of them basically say the exact same thing, that I will bring him down. And that's why Bane had come after him originally, remember, back in the 90s.
And it's funny because they say it's like something's driving him where he won't quit. Same thing goes for Bane. Both of them had that tragic childhood moment of seeing their parents dying right in front of them. Then they made a promise to both their mothers saying this is what they're going to set out to do, and they do it. They have to. They're different from other people. They have a certain drive that no one else has because they still sometimes have family. They don't anymore.
Exactly. Now, this looks like the end. Bane's done beating on Batman. He says, "This is it, Batman. This is how you die." And Batman looks out of him with a big old stupid bloody grin.
Bloody,
tells him straight up, "Just Bane, shut up." And Batman knocks him out, or Bane knocks him out.
So at this point, it's like, we've done this so many times, you know what to do.
Exactly. And Bane, remember, had captured everybody in the city that Batman cared about at all that didn't leave. So he had Catwoman and Gordon and Duke and other hostages. So he calls and says, he calls up to Bird and says, "You know what, Batman declined my offer, so go ahead and kill the hostages." But there's no answer.
Bird. Mr. Bird.
He's looking for Bane, and then someone tells him over the phone, "I'm sorry, Mr. Bird is currently unavailable. May I take a message?"
What?
He's trying to figure out who this is, and it turns out the whole idea was they allowed Catwoman to be caught so that she could break out while Batman was distracting Bane and break everybody else out. Here, she's broke everybody out and took out all of his guys, and now they're hanging upside down the way the Robins were, and on their chests there's carved, "I am Cat." So the safe house is not so much of a safe house anymore.
No.
Then you get to Arkham, because Bane's decided he's going to go take out get the Psycho Pirate for himself. And you see in the lightning, he's at the bottom of the steps, Batman's at the top of the steps. Lightning
walking
turns off, another strike of lightning.
Into Arkham.
Hmm?
I said he's walking into Arkham while the lightning passes. And I thought this was a great panel, too. One is dark while he talks to the next. When the lightning hits, you can see what Batman's doing, which is very eerie and creepy.
So Bane gets up, smashes the doors, and the next time, no one left alive. But it was interesting seeing basically the rise of Batman and the rise of Bane in a parallel light.
Yeah, and they're so similar. I forgot how similar they actually were. Also, I didn't know this. This was not for the comic book, but I think in like the Arkham video game, one of them, Bane's mask, if you look at the white part of his mask, is in the shape of a bat almost. So it just, and like I said, back in the day, they thought they could have been brothers. They were so similar. They have the same reasons for fighting and doing what they do, but in different methods. So this was a really good book. I can't wait for more of these. Anytime Bane comes back in the books, I'm a fan of Bane. Huge fan of Bane. Plus, he came out. Plus, he was created the year I was born. But
yeah, well, that was the Batman major difference. The major difference between them is that Batman has rules. There's certain things he will not do.
Well, same for Bane too. Certain things he won't do.
Not as much.
Not as much. No, they're a lot dirtier than Batman's.
Yeah,
but he still has his own guideline.
So, but that brings us to the next comic that has another origin story. This is Green Lantern's number 18.
The Last Testament of the First Lantern. Now, I don't think this is a storyline they're starting. This is just a one-off origin story of Valhoun, the First Lantern. This gets pretty deep, guys.
Oh, yeah.
This
actually goes back to, if I remember right, before the... it goes before Oa and the Guardians.
Yes, this he had a long history.
And we actually see the return of Necron in this story, in the flashbacks. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to see him. I was like, man, I haven't seen this guy in a long time. But he basically has the powers of a god, and you see him facing off against Hal Jordan. But he has to go back in time and let you know how he came to be. Back on Earth 15, 3079 AD, you see Valhoun and his mother, and it looks like the world is on fire, the city's on fire, and they're trying to get out. But she has a lantern in her hand that she gives Valhoun, and she tells him, leave, and take the lantern with you. And he's saying, no, Mom, I can't leave you. Well, then there's an explosion. You see his mom on the ground, covered in some debris, telling him, Valhoun, it's got to be you. You must go. You must find a way to save us. Promise me, Valhoun. And as she's doing that, her hand starts to fade away, and he says, I promise. I love you, Mom. And everything died. There is a big explosion, except for him. He did not die. He somehow drifts off into space.
Well, they called this, was it here? Wait a minute. This is not just a regular lantern. This was actually called the Travel Lantern. It's an experimental device for infinite exploration.
And I was going to ask you, how does this map work here? They gave us a little description of the map of how the traveling goes with this thing, but I'm still a little lost.
Yeah, well, the Travel Lantern moves in basically three directions, it says. It moves through time and space and multiverse space. So you can go
really
to any time, anywhere, and any world using this lantern.
Seems like too much power.
Yeah.
But as this happens, he says it wasn't easy to master. He had to learn it fast, though. And it took him a very long time from jumping from here to here. He doesn't know if it was days, weeks. He doesn't even know anymore. He was just trying to stay alive. So he's traveling all over the universe, and he falls on this planet, and he says, like, as if he's lost, I'm sorry, it says if there was any hope, this could have been used to travel the lanterns, travel the universe, travel the multiverse, and he found a way to save Earth. He had to find a way to save his home. And he says, I became a Spectrum. He became able to travel world to world, separating himself from other things. The emotional spectrums like seeds across the valley, seeking scientific civilization, and he was hoping that one day he could find and master all this and save his plan from being destroyed. Now he went on Earth 17, and they used the emotional spectrum as a plant life.
Yeah, to resurrect plant life.
And, you know, restore everything back to the way it was. But he didn't like that, so he moved on. That's not what he needed. And then he moves to Earth 47, and they thought they used the lantern as beautiful music, and they just have fun playing that. Yeah,
they used the power of the emotional spectrum to make music.
I thought it was kind of funny. Out of everything you guys used, we used it to make peaceful music. Then you went to Earth 3. Now, a crazy wizard uses this and used a little piece of his soul to create the power ring, but he said that definitely wasn't fun, and he moved on very fast. But there were so many Earths, so many different places, until finally he went to Earth 0, planet Malthus, and 10 billion years ago. Ooh, that's a long time.
Oh, yeah.
He finally found a world that would hold up to the task. He tells them he's been traveling across the space and time just to find many friends, but his name is Valhoun, and he has come in peace.
Well, it also says at the top of this, the Malthusians would become the guardians of the universe.
Oh, yes. So he...
because they were actually brilliant scientists. So this is before the Guardians. So it sounds like Malthus actually becomes Oa.
Mm-hmm. And this, as he said, was 10 million years ago. So this is very,
10 billion
very
years ago.
Before the ring happened. No, any of the other rings happened. And he said it was an awe to see how smart they were, all the technology they had. He said these were happy times. And then they devoured themselves from emotion.
Divorced.
And
they divorced themselves from all emotion.
Oh, thank you. And then they poured it all into the lantern. Wonder how he got that multi spectrum in the lantern. And then they look like they're having some type of, what do you even call it? It's like a cult meeting?
Kind
of. Some type of ritual. And they're saying, our hearts, our emotions, we know, we now forsake. Saying we did it, we finally freed ourselves from emotions, and they're trying to figure out now what's happening. Seems like some type of storm's gathering, lightning's happening, clouds are coming across. And it's there in the center, you see a ring floating in the air.
Yeah, they're pouring all their emotions and giving it all into this great heart. Created a ring.
And it's the ring, and they're telling him to stay back, stop Vahum, but he can't overcome this. And that's reminding me of something out of Lord of the Rings, actually.
Yeah, the One Ring.
And actually, I think that's where both stories took from, was from Greek mythology. I think
yeah.
from Plato.
Well, this was the first power ring, it says.
Yeah.
The mightiest of all rings.
And he puts it on his hand, and he feels like a god at this point.
Yeah.
And
he
says,
was Vahum, the first lantern.
Yep. And him and the Guardians, they were having good times at one point. Everything was going well. He became, he figured out how to use the Force of the Ring. The ring had all this power in it, and he could feel it in his bones just coursing through his body, finally, but it still needed work. They implanted one of the greatest hearts, and this is where we go back from the first...
Well, the first lantern they built, they called the Great Heart. That's what they're talking about there. They implanted the Great Heart within his chest, huh?
And that's what he put in him, and that's what they were talking about in Rebirth earlier on, right? When the Green Lanterns. So this kind of goes back to what we already seen. And it's funny kind of seeing the Guardians in their blue skin just working on them like scientists and not in their red robes. But they made this perfect technology for him. And it returned, and he said he started getting cold and take the ring back to Earth. And he could take the ring back to Earth and save his planet. And he could just be free and go home and live a peaceful life. So he let them perform this experiment on him. Didn't seem like anything was going wrong. Then he started slipping. Little things here and there. And meanwhile, the Molson Spectrum started to become a little bit too intense. It was breaking him apart. And they tried to hide it from him. They tried to play... he tried to play the hero, but it was hard to remember what was next and what was going to happen. This is Remy, one of the most brilliant Guardians they had on the planet. He lied to him. He said he was his friend, but betrayed him, really. All of the Guardians did, but Remy was the one that he called his friend. And he said he lost his planet. He's traveled far and wide through many dimensions, and he was hooked up directly to this emotional spectrum. And he was surprised. I'm sorry, he's not surprised. This is when he talks to the audience, really, in my opinion. He's telling us, were you surprised I wanted to kill them all after everything they've done to me? They had to create it, the Green Lanterns to defeat me, the first seven of them. After that, the Guardians looked away from all their rings for billions of years, and they decided to lock him up. Remy, his own friend, made a special prison just for him. Now, is that what you call a friend?
Well, they called it the Chamber of Shadows.
And that's really what happened to him. He became dark. He became evil. Everything, there's no light really in there. There's a little glimpse of it, but he had to spend billions of years in that. And all I could think about his mother saying, find us a way. You're the only one to do so. He's been locked up. He said he's failed. The first 10 billion years were the hardest. Oh my goodness, the first 10 billion years. That's, I would go insane.
Well, it says
and that's
the first billion,
to him,
yeah.
He says, too.
Then after he says, 2 billion years, he wanted to die.
Yeah.
He did, tried everything he could, he prayed for it and everything else. Even after 5 billion years, he lived. 6 billion, 7 billion, 8 billion, 9 billion, but at 10 billion years, he got out. So
yeah, he became a god.
Yeah.
And he thought the lanterns, they thought they would kill him. And this is when you see, oh man, wow, we just say his name. What's his name again?
That's Necron.
Necron, thank you. Necron comes out at this point. And when he sees him, he's thinking to himself, oh, please, good. Thank God you're here to kill me. Please kill me. I've been waiting all this time. Just take me out. And he tells him, Necron tells him, no. He's like, why? Why won't you do that? I've been waiting for death this whole time. He says, what you are beyond reach of a normal human. Why else do you think you stayed alive for all this time? That no human should live for this many years. Billions of years are way too much. So he says, I cannot kill you. Even the Lord of Death cannot do it. And he asks him, please do it. You are the Lord of Death. You should be able to take me out. But he says, the emotional spectrum pulled you back to the realm of the living. So I cannot do anything for you. And he's begging him, please just do something. Take me. I've been waiting. Don't do this to me. And this is when Necron tells him, your bond with the emotional spectrum is profound. It's so far advanced. No one has ever – he's never seen something like this before. And as long as you're there – as long as the light's there, you will still be there, Valhoom. You will never die because the light will always be around. So he just goes drifting out in space, floating there for days, weeks, just trying to die. Although he knows nothing will work. He just starts to burn into ions, dust, and the light. He says it's like a curse of the light. The Guardians did this to him. They knew this would happen. So now he's even more upset with them. So now he won't stop. Because they took everything away from him. They robbed him of everything he loved. Even death, he can't have any peace. So he says, you know what? I'm going to go after Remy. I'm going to make them suffer just like I've suffered this whole time. If I cannot die, I will have revenge on everyone who betrayed me. And I am the First Lantern. And I will be the death to all the Guardians. With a sadistic smile on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we come to where we are in Green Lanterns right now. But next issue will be the return of Dr. Polaris.
And you remember, he was one of the villains in Justice League versus Suicide Squad. They disappeared halfway through the battle.
We haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
So, and then the last book we have for this week, is going to be Superman number 18. This is the first issue of the 4-part storyline Superman Reborn that's going to be across Superman and Action.
And this is an awesome story so far. This is great. And like I said, it's weird because I didn't think I was going to be this big of a Superman fan. I never hated him. I still like him, but I'm getting these books every week.
See, what it is most of – because your age, you probably remember a lot of Superman from the New 52. It was only a couple of years, but really, towards the end of the – before, right before Flashpoint in the New 52 is the Superman you know mostly.
Well, yeah, I guess that has a lot to do with it because when I tried to get into Superman – at the time, there were so many iconic books out, I couldn't get them unless they were on trade or volume.
Uh-huh.
So I read those, but it wasn't nothing where I said, oh man, I love Superman so much, I gotta buy every book. I didn't know really where to start. And then when the New 52 came out, that was a perfect way for me to start somewhere, and I didn't like that.
And that wasn't Superman, yeah.
Yeah, well,
that
was
the
Superman
old Superman
Doomsday.
That I loved back in the 90s. This is Superman. Yeah.
And this feels more like Superman right now. Even the Superman Doomsday, the Superman Death of Superman, and then it was like one of the best stories. I can't even remember it right now. It was the day Superman died and went to the sun, and that was when Lex Luthor was able to tap into some of Superman's powers. I can't think of it.
Was that a New 52 story?
No, that's like literally one of the best Superman stories ever. As you go on with
I think you're talking about All-Star Superman.
Thank you. Yes,
All-Star. I've not Superman. Read it, but I know what it is.
Oh man, that thing's that's great. That's a great.
I need to pick it up
story.
At some point.
It sums up what Superman stands for and what he will die for, and it's a great book.
Yeah.
New 52 Superman didn't resemble really none of that. There was parts of it that you could tell was there, but they tried to make him so appealing to a new audience. There was no need to do so.
Yeah.
We still like him. We still like our old Superman guys.
Well,
but.
This is Superman number 18, like I said, and it starts off looks like up in the sky, and it just says time answers, space questions, matter questions, energy answers, hollow spaces waiting to be filled. Then you see Oz standing in front of the bank of TVs and stuff, and it says
this has to be Ozymandias. Just saying.
I don't know. He's Mr. Oz, as far as we know, and you see he goes back to look in his menagerie of who he's captured. He had picked up Bane. That looks like the villain from the multiverse story, isn't it? The second, yes, he had got I forget what his name was, but he still also got Tim Drake. And then it says, someone got out. Do you hear me? And that was Tim Drake talking. Someone got out. And then, Oz looks across and there's a giant monolith with a big old hole in it. And it's him just looking at it.
And I have a theory about that too.
Okay. Let's get to the theory at the end of this and see if...
Yeah, I was going to say, you want to wait till the end
Yeah,
or no?
We'll wait till the end of this.
Okay.
But then he looks into the hole and see all over the walls that says, Superman will save me, Superman, please save me, and Superman, where are you? And his drawings of Superman, everything's been scratched on the walls of someone looking for Superman to save him. Then we get back to Hamilton County with Clark and Lois and Jonathan, and it's Clark and Lois's anniversary, and John got him some presents. And you see that John had got his mom a leather-bound writing journal with an inscription that says, Mom's Adventure Journal. And then for his dad, he got the Farmer's Almanac to help him with the planting and running the farm. And then you go through basically them having, and then you all of a sudden you hear a doorbell, and there's something sitting on the door or on the doorstep with a bow. And you turn around, and John says, hey, mister, did you leave this? It's someone way off. And Clark Kent turns around and looks at him. And then, because
dad's in the house.
Yeah, what we didn't cover was last week,
in
Clark
Action
Kent,
Comics.
Yes, the Clark Kent, or the other Clark Kent, asked Lois out on a date, asked her to marry him, because that's the way it's supposed to be, and she turned him down. So he followed her home and found out that she has a whole other family, and he kind of had this weird evil turn to him.
Yeah.
We're still not sure what's happening with that.
Coming out.
But this is him leaving them a present for their anniversary, and then Crypto comes running out and growling at him. He says, it's me, boy. And then as Crypto's barking at him, he said, good, always ready for. And that's when Superman turns around and looks and says, wait a minute. The other one, he's here. He could hear him. He switches to Superman and takes off out into the yard and starts looking, and the guy's gone. John's yelling at Crypto to heal, and the guy walks away. So by the time Lois and Superman get out there, there's nobody out there. But they see the present was a photo album of the Kents. And this is actually a photo album of them from this, and it looks like it was actually them. It's Martha and Jonathan with the baby baby Kal-El. You get Clark and Lana. You get Nathan Kent, who joined the Union Army after what he saw at the Bleeding Kansas. It has pictures of his grandparents at prom night. It has pictures from the Daily Planet of Clark, Lois, Jimmy, and everybody else. It's like their history. It's like, how did he get all this? And then they see, wait a minute, the kitchen is on fire. They turn and go in, and there's this white fire. And no matter what they do, they can't get it to stop. So they have to get everybody out of the house. They turn around and see Jonathan's on fire too. And this is white fire that seems to be destroying everything, and everything's disappearing once it catches on fire.
But there's no smoke coming from none of this.
Exactly. It's almost like it's erasing the universe or something. But Superman grabs Jonathan and tries to get him out of there, and Jonathan disappears. Then they find him in the basement, and he grabs him again, and they find him. Then he disappears, and they end up in his room, and Superman wraps him in the cape, and they take off out of the house, so they're away from the fire, and then they see Jonathan is still burning and slowly disappearing until finally the house and Jonathan all disappear. So you're stuck with just Superman and Lois trying to figure out what's going on, and then look down the and then the fire's a little bit around the photo album, and they look in, all the pictures are gone. They've all been burned up. All of them.
It's like
they
never existed.
Exactly. In the last couple panels, it says, we didn't lose him, Lois. We didn't lose John. That Clark Kent took him, and we're going to make him give him back. So they're heading to Metropolis to find the other Clark Kent. So it's going to be interesting to see who this other Clark Kent is, because he seems to have money, because when he picked up Lois to go to their date, he was riding in a limo. They were going to the fanciest restaurant in the city, and for some reason he felt that he and Lois were destined to be together for some reason.
Now, also here, did you read the last, very last page they got here? Of who could this Clark Kent actually be?
No, I didn't.
Look through there for a second. I was going to say my theory who I think this new Superman might be. Yeah. Yeah, first time we've seen him so far.
Now, the back of the book has an actual thing on an article on the back page about who do you think this could actually be. It says, find out which of these candidates is the fake or the real fake Clark Kent when you pick up Action Comics 957 on March 18th. Now, the six options they give you is Bizarro, the New 52 Superman, Mr. Mixia's Pitlick, the Eradicator, Martian Manhunter,
Yeah, Martian Manhunter threw me for a second.
Or Magog, which is one of the new gods, I believe.
Now, there's one character from Superman's past they did not put on here.
Who?
They didn't put in Superman Prime or Superboy Prime, whichever one you want to call them.
No, I don't think so. I don't know if they're going to get into that because they have a new Superboy right now.
Hmm.
But
I was wondering if they could do that still. I'm like, this could be Superboy Prime.
The interesting one for me would be possibly Mixius Pytlick, especially we just saw in Supergirl and how he was in love with Supergirl. Well, he shows up in love with Clark or Lois.
Yeah, that would be funny. And plus, we did see him on the show, and usually DC doesn't do that for random.
We
have a reasoning behind putting something like that in there.
Well, we know Bizarro's already in Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Red Hood and Outlaws,
The new 52 Superman, we watched him die, and his power is still in Lana Lang right now. That's why she's Superwoman. That was in action also.
Him. But Eradicator, we destroyed him.
Manhunter and Magog haven't been around. Manhunter, I don't see doing this unless something happened and he's going crazy.
Yeah, I don't see him doing something this evil.
So, and Magog, I'm not really familiar with.
White Flames, too.
I don't know. Do you know much about Magog?
No, I really don't.
Ah, it looks like he was from Kingdom Come, which I actually need to get that back out. I have the original four issues of that.
Oh, sweet.
So I need to get that back out and read it. Or pick it up. I may just get it on Hoopla from the library. That way I can just read it on my phone. It's a beautiful comic, though. Have you ever looked through any of the images that Alex Ross did for that?
Yeah, I did.
It is phenomenally beautiful. But I think Mixius Pytlick would be a funny one, or would be a good one for this. Because he's crazy to start with.
Yeah, I haven't read the other issue yet. I got to read that and figure out who is it.
Yeah, I don't even have it yet. I'm going to pick that up probably next week. So that's what's going on for Superman Reborn right now. And that was our comics review for March 1st. So I believe that leaves us with only one thing to do.
One more stop.
And that song only can mean one thing. It's time for our comic shop pull list. This week, we got the comic shop pull list for March 15th, 2017. Now, the comic shop pull list, as always, is brought to you by the Shazbots. That's their song, Comic Shop. Check them out on iTunes and Facebook. Let them know DC Superpower sent you. Or go on over to theshazbots.com to get all the information. They even have a video series they made last summer. But we were talking about Superman number 18. Well, this week coming up, we get part 3 of Superman Reborn and Superman number 19. It says, in the penultimate chapter of this tale of life and of Superman's son, or let me start that again. In the penultimate chapter of this tale, the life of Superman's son hangs in the balance, and the Man of Steel faces the truth about his life. The art is done by Mick Gray and Patrick Gleason, and it's written by Patrick Gleason and Peter J. Tomasi.
Yeah, this is going to be a good run.
Oh, yeah.
All the Superman stories have been a good run so far in Rebirth.
And they also remind you that the covers by Patrick Gleason and Mick Gray and the variant covers by Gary Frank of the variant covers by Gary Frank for Superman 18 and 19 and Action Comics 975 and 976 all connect to form a vertical image.
I was wondering about that. Oh, okay. So I got to put these together.
Yep.
I love when they do that. It makes me a real collector.
Yeah, but then it makes you have to buy a bunch more stuff.
It does, but if I like the story like this, I'm going to buy it anyway, so give us a little extra while we do so. Next, we have All-Star Batman number 8, Hats and Bats. Underestimate the Mad Hatter at your own peril. Batman takes on one of his most dangerous and deranged foes in the mind-bending tale from the powerhouse creative team of writer Scott Snyder and artist
Giuseppe.
You help me with his last name too.
Camuncoli. Giuseppe Camuncoli.
Okay.
And then the only other one they didn't talk about was what was that? The other artist on there is Mark. What?
The other artist on here is Mark Miles.
Okay. So that's gonna be interesting seeing the Mad Hatter. We've not seen the Mad Hatter since the beginning of Rebirth either.
No, we haven't. There's gonna be another villain that they pop back in.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the one thing All-Star Batman's been doing is using every villain Batman's ever faced eventually gets in there.
which was great. Like I said, we pulled a villain from the video game that I'd never seen in comic books before, so that was a big wow.
So, but that brings us over to Aquaman number 19 next. And this has got an interesting cover of Aquaman facing, looks like a squid or something. But it's H20.0 Part 1. A new storyline begins when Batman must forge a tense alliance with the very people who once tried to assassinate him. The super military team called the Aquamarines. A lot of... I'm still amazed every time I hear that wow, a lot of work went into that name.
Hey, it's Aquaman. What, you know?
Yeah. Well, they need his expertise when an Antarctic research base goes offline with blood in the water. The art is done by Philippe Barones, and it's written by Dan Abnett.
There we go. Next on here, we have Batman issue number 19, I Am Bane, Part 4. Batman is losing. Bane is going to break him for good this time. The Dark Knight must turn to a very unlikely weapon to beat Bane once and for all. Art done by Danny McKay, David Finch, and written by Tom King.
Okay. And now we finally get Batwoman number 1. It says the Many Arms of Death, Part 1. At last, Batwoman is back in her own ongoing series. On the island nation of Coriana, anything goes for members of the criminal underworld. And during her lost years, after being drummed out of the military, Kate Kane found a kind of refuge there. But now, a deadly new bioweapon is available in the markets of Coriana, and Batwoman will have to face up to the things she did in those days, and the people she left behind, some of whom would be happier to see her dead than alive. Now it says writer Marguerite Bennett from the DC Bombshell series is joined by James T. Tynion IV from Detective Comics and superstar artist Steve Epting from Captain America and Valet to present an epic Batwoman story that will alter the course of her life forever. This one's unmissable. So the start, and this actually looks and sounds more like, almost like a James Bond style adventure.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of seemed like that when we had the first rebirth. It was in so many different parts of this happened. And you're like, she's all around the world.
Yeah.
I don't think Batman goes this international. But next we have Green Arrow issue number 19. Reunion finale. Okay, so this one wasn't going to last long. They just put out the other one last week, so.
Mm-hmm.
Or this week, I should say. Reunion finale. Orphaned as an infant and raised on a Navajo reservation, and the superhero Arsenal returns to his adopted home to defend it from a violent militia hired by Queen Industries. Oliver Queen's company has been up to no good since his supposed death, but Green Arrow is on the scene and trying to make things right. Unfortunately for Ollie, he's the last person his former sidekick wanted to see. Art done by Eleanor Colley and written by Benjamin Percy.
Okay. And next up, we have Green Lanterns number 19, The Green Impurity Part 1. Simon helps Jessica find a Guardian of the Galaxy to train her. As the rogue Guardian called Raimi begins his lessons...
Wait, you said Guardian of the Universe.
Oh, what'd I say?
Galaxy.
Oh, sorry.
Wrong company.
Okay, let's try that again. Simon helps Jessica find a Guardian of the Universe to train her. As the rogue Guardian called Raimi begins his lessons, they may not be enough to stop Volthoom's influence over the Lanterns, as his obsession with controlling Jessica again grows.
Hmm. He's going to mess himself up there.
Mm-hmm. Well, art by Ronan Cliquette and written by Sam Humphries. Now, remember in this that Raimi is actually Volthoom.
Mm-hmm. He took him over a while ago. So, he's getting closer to his master plan. I don't know if he can carry it out. We have two new Green Lanterns, and one of them has finally put away his gun and relying more on his ring. I love that.
Oh, yeah. The next one's going to be great. And I love that cover on it.
The next one is Harley Quinn, issue number 16, Red Meat, Part 3. Harley mixes up with the mayor's bloodthirsty secret weapon, and now she's taking the fight straight to the steps of City Hall. Scroll, come on, mouse. There we go. Art done by Carrie Evans and written by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palamani. Now, you like to cover for one character. I like to cover because I haven't seen this character. Now, I don't know if she's been... You said she's been in Harley Quinn, right?
Yeah, this is the second. This will actually be the third issue she's been in.
Okay, I didn't know she was in here. I didn't know Terra. And what do they call? She is a Terra, but
I didn't know she was
where...
a Terra. She's actually. Let me look it up here again to make sure I got the right name. In here, she's Atlee, A-T-L-E-E, from Strata.
Okay,
she's one of the heroes of Strata.
Okay, but I knew her. They still were like going by the Terra for some reason. I'm like, that's exactly not Terra, but all right. And I haven't seen her since the Teen Titans, so I'm happy to see she's back. I might have to pick up the last three issues just so I can see what she's been up to and how they were able to write her into this story, because I never thought I would see her in a Harley Quinn story.
So, but, oh, wait, as I blanked for a second, I started looking up information on Atlee, but next
I did
up...
too, and I said, wait a minute, let me get back to the real task at hand here.
Yeah, well, next up is Justice League number 17. This is Timeless Part 3. The Justice League's epic war through time continues as Superman confronts the leader of the Timeless Army, who gives the Man of Steel an impossible choice. Save Krypton from exploding, or save his friends.
That's a tough decision.
Yeah, art is done by Matt Ryan and Fernando Pessarin, and it's written by Brian Hitch. That's interesting.
That
can you go back and save your
night.
Planet?
Huh?
Go back and get the choice to possibly save your planet from ever blowing up?
We all know what he's going to do, because when he's had this opportunity before, it's like a, you know what, they're already gone. So, they sent him away for a reason to be Earth's hope. So
yeah.
But next we have Nightwing, and that's funny, because we have Nightwing, and Nightwing was the hero of Krypton, at least the folklore hero of Krypton, so funny how that works. Nightwing issue number 17. The first stop on Nightwing's international quest brings him to Paris, where he must face off against his own great-great-grandfather, the Talon known as William Cobb.
Interesting.
Art done by Javier Fernandez and written by Tim Seeley.
Yeah, this was interesting. This is like the Nightwing of Death, or Deathwing, I think is what he was calling himself, the guy they show on the cover here.
Yeah,
he showed
funny.
Up at the very
that.
End of Nightwing last issue.
Until I zoomed in and clicked on it, I thought that was just Nightwing in his red again. I was like, wait, what? Then I looked at the mask. I'm like, oh, that's scary.
Yeah.
Not want to see that at nighttime.
Give me just a second. Let me bring up... I have Nightwing sitting here. I got to... There it is.
Oh, man, that's...
I can find out... Yeah, that's the thing. It looks like Nightwing's red costume.
It looks exactly like Nightwing's red costume, just with a mask on there.
Yeah, it's Deathwing is who this is.
Okay, he's got some shoulder padding and some more padding up top.
Yeah, he's got, like, full-on armor almost underneath that.
Yeah, if it's his grandpa, I'm pretty sure he would need some armor. But this mask is a thing of nightmares, guys. People thought Batman was scary.
Well, that's okay, because the next one's not going to be so scary. The next one's Super Sons number 2. I'm all excited to get another one of these. This is going to be a great series, I think.
Yeah, same here. My mom hasn't read it yet, but I said there's one book she had to read from last week, so that would be Super Sons.
Yeah. Well, this is When I Grow Up Part 2. Robin and Superboy. That's all you have to do is stop right there. But it says Robin and Superboy in the clutches of Lex Luthor. The boys are in big trouble. How exactly are they supposed to explain what's happened to Superman and Batman? Plus, Kid Amazo's power grows. And this tyrant in the making is about to make life miserable for the Super Sons. Art is done by George Jimenez, and it's written by Peter J. Tomasi.
Cool. And that's going to be that's a must-get every single week. Well, other week.
Once a month.
Wait, is this one once a month?
I think that's a monthly title.
Oh, man. This is... Yeah. Man, time, dude. I don't know what happens to it.
It's slipping away.
It is. But last one on our list is Trendy number 7. We get the big three again. And I love this cover because this is showing from everybody's background, their main big villains.
Oh, yeah.
Divided
who's the woman there? You got Ra's al Ghul, Lex Luthor, and who is that?
Oh, man. It begins with a C. It's a Wonder Woman villain. Yeah, her.
Okay.
Which was weird. I saw her, Ra's, and then Lex. I was thinking, I figure it would be somebody else from Superman's
past. He is from Superman's past. That is the big villain.
That is, but then you have Joker, and you also have Ares from Wonder Woman. You know what I mean? Those are usually their big ones. So, to me, I think Ra's would be his second biggest villain compared to Joker. So, that's why I'm thinking, why is Lex here? Maybe, you know what, Ken? I think Doomsday might be his top villain, at least for fear and scary.
Not historically, though.
Not historically, but to beat him up, I would have to say Doomsday is way over Lex Luthor. That might be why he's on here. But anyways, getting off track here. Divide We Fall, Prelude. America's divided, and now a hero has fallen,
and it might split the country even more. Can Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman stand against the riots while defending a bigot enemy? Don't miss the beginning of an epic adventure that will test the ideals of all three heroes. I forgot I had a touch screen. I've been using my mouse this whole time. Art done by Clay Munn and written by Francis Moonpaw. Yeah, I've been like, why isn't my mouse working on my computer? I'm like, oh yeah, I could just been touching it this whole time.
But I believe that's the end of the last week's or next week's comics.
It is.
And that brings us to the end of another episode.
Another great episode.
That's right. We've actually only got a couple of weeks until we actually reach our 1 year anniversary, man.
We really got to figure out what we're going to do. Are we where are we going to record?
We may have to record that one together, actually, all in the same room or something.
Yeah, I might have to come over there and meet you up after work or something.
That's right. And have a good... We'll make it a big bash.
We will. This will be fun.
And actually, Super Friends, Vernon, why don't you let them know how they can get a hold of us?
And as I said, we got a couple new followers to our Instagram. Thanks, guys. Appreciate that. you can find us on our Twitter at SuperpowersDC. And for our Instagram and our Facebook feeds, you can find us SuperpowersDC. SuperpowersDC. DC Superpowers Podcast. And you can find me on my personal uses of my Instagram, Hollow Matt Wolf, Facebook, Vernon Mac Wayne Moore, and my Twitter will be B-Yellow.
And you can always find me on Facebook and as Twitter and Instagram at GW1Ken, and on Facebook, I'm Ken Rose. And Super Friends, we're trying to figure out what do we want to do in the next couple of weeks for our big one-year anniversary show. Well, why don't you let us know? Get a hold of us on Facebook, on Instagram. You can email us at DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. What do you want us to do? This is your show as much as ours. We've been trying to say that the whole time. So hit us up on social media or in an email. Let us know what you think of the show. Are you having a good time? What do you think? Have we grown well in the last year? We're almost at 100. We're almost at 50 episodes. We're almost at 1 year into this show. I'm hoping the show's going to last for a long time. I know you guys are enjoying it. We see the downloads and listens are growing monthly. One other thing you could do for us is take a minute, head on over to iTunes, and leave us a rating or review. That's a great way to tell us how much you like us, or not like us, but how do you like the show? Are we doing a good job for you? Are we giving you the information you're looking for? Let us know. Go to iTunes, find the DC Superpowers Podcast, and leave a review for us.
Yes.
But, Vernon, did you have anything else for today?
Just thank. I love the appreciation and all the love that you guys are showing us. And hit me up on my Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, anything. Just let us know. If we're going to do a live show for our Big 50, let us know. Whatever, we want to meet somewhere, see some fans, hey, we'll do so. Just get in contact with us. Let us know what we want to hear.
That's right. We only got a couple weeks to figure this out. So, Vernon, thanks for hanging out, man. It's Super Friends. Thank you for hanging out, and we'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.